You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Mats Hjelm. Mats, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your current work and perhaps through the lens of the exhibition you have up now. Can you tell us a little bit about that exhibition, where it is, and what it consists of?
Yes, I have a show up at, I think, one of the oldest art venues in Sweden called Konstnärshuset, which is formed in the, I think, 18th century. So I'm showing a project in, they have a big exhibition space, and I'm showing a project which is based on I'm working on a documentary film based in Liberia, and in the middle of our filming, the Ebola started spreading, and so the last thing I did when we were there 2 years ago was to leave my camera behind to one of our of the people that we're working with, who's a social worker, and said, well, if I can come back, you can. I'll instruct you to film. So I instructed him to film through Skype, and then he sent memory cards to us here in Sweden, which were actually quarantined for 2 weeks. So we had FedEx had to quarantine the cards for 2 weeks until they sent them further. So this project is based on the filming that he did in Liberia during the Ebola crisis, which is an interesting, I've always been interested in this kind of 70s participatory filmmaking strategies, but always been reluctant to use them because they've, but this is close to these experiments with participatory filmmaking. And in this case, I think it worked out very well.
And what were you asking him to film there, and what aspect of it was participatory?
Well, the participatory aspect is that he's actually filming. So what we did was that we just asked him to start by talking to his friends about what was going on, and then what he did was that he started traveling, you know, so he went to different parts of the country and talked to people. But it's also, I mean, I don't know how much this is what he wants to do or what he thinks that I want him to do. But at the same time, I don't know how much, you know, it's this kind of working with a lot of cultural differences always means that you're never sure. It's always the kind of, I'm not sure if he does what I want him to do or if he does what he wants to do. If he does something that is he often says that you know, I want the international body to know what's going on here, and I'm just saying, I'm just making a film, I'm not the international body. So it's this kind of but it's been interesting because it was the only way for us to continue the film during that period.
And so from your perspective, he is, you know, in this participatory way, a kind of cinema verite, he's documenting what's happening in the Ebola crisis, essentially.
I suppose, but I mean what he is he's a protagonist in our film. So we're making a film which is has a more of a complex other story, but I took that part out, and I made an installation work where this is part of the installation, because I found, you know, when you do film, I mean, this documentary is a project for 4 or 5 years long project that might end up in all sorts of different ways, but often there is something in the process that differs, and in this case, this particular part differed, and I thought that was so interesting, so I made this installation based on that, and I think what came out was a very sort of everyday. It's not like, you know, you don't see dead people in, and you don't see ambulances. You don't see, you know, it's not that. You see, life is going on, but life is a little different, you know. People cannot shake hands as they used to. There is work is not being done. He talks to a woman selling groceries at the market, but nobody comes. You know, there's these small things, very, and I found that very interesting. And also in a kind of, I don't know, I've linked it to some kind of I've talked about it in relation to this the kind of artwork that was made during the plague in Europe, you know, the death dance kind of, which is not so much about death but rather about life. You know, people were partying, people were doing things. Although the plague was going on, and with recent talk about disease, it's almost like we don't understand when the disease is actually there. What happens? How do you feel? What is life? You know, and I think this comes across in a very warm and kind of humorous. The two friends, the one filming and the other one making interviews, or the opposite, they flip. And there's one little sequence where the other guy says, so what are the advantages and disadvantages of Ebola? That's an interesting question. And so it's
That is an interesting question and a very odd one. Can you answer that in any form? What are the advantages or disadvantages of Ebola?
The one that he asked, he pretty much said no. But I mean, what he said was that, well, Ebola wasn't where he was at the time. But I think there are parts of this where they actually, there's a school being built and renovated due to the Ebola prevention, where the Ebola prevention forced the school kids to stay at home. So they got a little time and a little money to renovate the school. Yeah, that's a positive thing. So there is always something in the kind of movement that can be at least in the long run positive or. And another positive thing is that it didn't lead to another civil war, which a lot of people thought in Liberia. Mm. Because Liberia went through a very brutal civil war, and the security situation has not been very good. And with Ebola coming, a lot of people were afraid that new violence would start, which didn't happen.
It's a very interesting perspective, you know, and that term that the cameraman was using, the international body, is sort of an interesting one, because in one sense, you know, my perspective on Ebola and much of the so-called international body is, of course, the crisis, the images of bodies and the figures of the numbers of people dying and sick, and it's a kind of fascinating insight that would only happen if you're on the ground there looking at it in a from the perspective of a citizen, that life is actually existing within this context and continues on, which is what's fascinating, because we don't perceive it that way. We imagine everybody's panicking and everybody's indoors or something.
Yeah. And the vast majority did not catch Ebola. I mean, So it seems like all these crises is all about the ones that did catch it, or the ones that. But the rest, what does that mean? What does it mean to live in that kind of? And it was interesting to Skype to them during that time too, because it's like you have this. It's almost like you have it's more almost like a film where you sit in a control room and somebody's isolated and you talk to that person in the room. It's this kind of I find that process and that situation very interesting and frightening, because at the time there were talks about millions of people dying, and it didn't happen, but it could have happened. And now we're actually able to go back because it's under control. And it was
and have
also
you been
frightening.
Back?
No, we haven't actually. We should maybe, but it's a sort of a financing problem. I mean, each step of a film needs to be financed, and then the funding runs out, and you need to start applying again. And we were hoping to maybe come back this fall, but we have maybe 95% of the film already done. But we would like to, because the Ebola got control, we would like to come back to do some additional interviews.
And when you talk about the film and being completed, how long will that be? Is it feature length? Or what
yeah,
does
it's
it
feature
mean
length. Yeah, but we're in a it's a film. I did another film about a Detroit church called the Shrine of the Black Madonna a couple of years ago, which is a church very strongly tied to the civil rights movement in the U.S. But they decided to do kind of missionary work in Africa, in Liberia. And this is what this film is about, the meeting between these civil rights people from the U.S. and the indigenous Liberians and their kind of interaction and what happened, which is an interesting, very interesting kind of look at ethnic history and ethnic complications, because Liberia is a country that was constructed by the American Colonialization Society to be a place for the free slaves in the U.S. to return to. And what happened was that there were people already living there, and they were forced back by the returning slaves are called settlers, and the people living there are called indigenous. And there is a big conflict, and the reason for the civil right or for the civil war in Liberia is the conflict between the former returning slaves and the people that already lived there when they came back. And now these people from Detroit or from the church, which has their roots in the civil rights movement and their roots in a kind of American history of slavery, comes back to these people or comes to these people in Africa with their idea of Jesus and the people in the Bible being black. It's a lot of misunderstandings, and there's a lot of history that makes this meeting very complicated. So this is the film that we're working on, and I'm purposely a little secret about what will happen in the film, because we're not really clear. It's a very you have to be thorough to do something like that. But it's a very interesting.
It's very complex. I mean, it's really a type of ethnographic filmmaking as well as participatory and kind of a cinema verite,
yeah.
And you're exploring issues that are enormously complex, it seems, maybe, you know, infinitely so, because there are all these perspectives that you're looking at, but then I suppose there's even more going on in terms of getting at what the so-called truth is.
I mean, if I were to believe in some objective truth, I wouldn't do what I do. I'm only investigating the a kind of multicultural reality, you know, and I try to navigate in that and try to somehow end up in places where most people with my background are not, don't have access to, and try to see what I can, bring out and what I can, but it's, but at the same time, I mean, you end up in this, if you do projects like this with this level of complexity, you're bound to end up with things like when we had to leave the camera and, you know, because you put yourself in so, in tricky situations, in a sense, both content-wise and personally. But
right.
We'll see.
Yes, you will. And the installation itself, can you describe that? Is it? What else is in the installation? How is it set up?
The installation is on. Well, there's a lot of details. It's projected on circular screens with anamorphic lenses and stuff like that. But the way it's done, it's a screen in the middle with one side is the Preston's travel in Liberia. The other side is more of a kind of meditation on fluids, because the Ebola is transmitted through body fluids. So I've been, it's water surfaces and fluids on the other side. So it's kind of like a meditative side and a very sort of talkative side. And then the room is lit from one side with a neon sign, which gives a kind of an orange tint to the whole room. There are images. So what you see on one side is that it's him traveling through Africa or through Liberia in different parts and talking to people. And the other side would be more of an abstract meditative side. And then, yeah. So I think it will look probably less... it actually looks quite good, and people thought I was filming, which is, I think, is a very good it's they thought highly of Preston's filming, because it looks very good. And I think we did a few things. My mother is a documentary filmmaker, and she did participatory work in the 80s with, you know, the video diary kind of stuff. And so she had some, you know, she taught me a little bit about, you know, make sure that the camera is all on wide angle and, you know, so you do, you prep the camera a little bit so that you end up with a certain type of material. But it's not that long. It's about, I think it's about 20 minutes long. And there are some parts where he is reflecting on the situation and some parts where he's doing interviews. I left the camera and a memory card recorder, a little Zoom recorder, which makes the sound when it doesn't get destroyed by wind very good. So we had to pretty much, I mean, I took away everything that was destroyed by wind, because I could never explain to him that he needed to protect the tape recorder from the wind. It never worked for some reason. He couldn't grasp that concept.
And this is the same film that will eventually be a feature length. Okay, you'll be
this is just a part of that. I'm not sure if it's even going to be in the film. The reason why we did this, the reason we did it was for the film, because we couldn't complete what we tried. I mean, we wanted to do a portrait of Preston and his surroundings. And I was afraid that because of Ebola, we could never come back, or he could die, or, you know, things could happen. And then, so we left the camera to be able to remotely finish the film, pretty much. This is not the case anymore. We can finish the film without using his material if we want to, and we will probably use their filming, but I'm not sure how. So this was a way of taking that out and giving significance to that work, because we might not even use it for the film, because the story is not about Ebola.
Right, right. That makes sense. And, you know, to look at this whole thing as an art project, as a film, I want to ask also about the context that you operate in. I mean, perhaps the government's more supportive of the arts there, but none of the things you're saying sound like they're in any way in the marketplace. And so I would think financing something like this is difficult because it doesn't have a commercial release that will reap rewards. Is that correct? And is this all kind of fundraising and grants?
No, but what we can do here, actually it's the documentary in a sense that finances the artwork a bit. So if you do a documentary film like this, you can apply for from the Swedish Film Institute. They can give you a bit of money to work with. And then it's a cooperation with Swedish Film Institute and Swedish Television. So there will be television rights for the film. So that's another So financing a documentary film of this scale is not impossible. So there is a market, and our last film was shown in a lot of countries like Japan and New Zealand and Canada and Australia and a lot of other countries. So and these broadcasting rights gives a little bit of money. So there is. I mean, it's not well funded, but there is a funding of film, of documentary films, and documentaries are on the rise internationally. So there is, but the art part, what I did, that's self-financed pretty much. There is no government grant involved. There is a bit of a tiny, tiny support from the institution where it's shown. So it is difficult, and I do some. Yeah, I have to do other work
Which is what? Do you teach or do?
Well,
other work
I do color grading for film. So I do, post-production work for film.
And
that's what
here
I
in the United States, there's a lot of private funding for films. I mean, not a lot of it, but what filmmakers tend to do because there's so little government support is also ask private individuals. Is that a system that is also used there?
It is. In this case, we haven't got any real private money. We are trying to get. And then I have an art practice which involves some pieces that can be sold. I have some installations that are bought by the Modern Museum here, for example. I have a gallerist that... So there is a bit of... there are some collectors that buy my work. It's not much, but there is some. And there is, of course, there is government support for traveling expenses. There can be government support for production. But in this particular exhibition, there is no government money for production. But other exhibitions that I've done, yes. Mm-hmm. And it is better in Sweden than it is in the U.S. Actually, way better.
That I'm sure of. Mats, I wish you the best with this and hope I'll be able to see that one day. In closing, is there anything else you want to say about this show? This interview will be running while the show is up, and perhaps people can come to it.
About the show, there was actually a radio review today. But it's difficult to talk to. I mean, I will always talk about what kind of bugs me with the project or interests me with the project. But I mean, it's the curator said, well, you know, what is the visual side of it? But for me, it's still the essence of this project is still the kind of Skype talk to Liberia in the middle of the Ebola crisis. That overshadows a lot of the rest of the project for me. And maybe if that can be conveyed somehow, if you can experience that feeling of just walking in that that land, or that it's almost like the kind of a Tarkovsky zone kind of feeling. But what they actually experience there then, I don't know. I wouldn't know.
Right. Well, it's a fascinating project, and I'm so glad you're doing it for many reasons. But, you know, as even erroneously as the cameraman was saying, you know, the international body, this idea of sharing that seems very important.
And I think your project, that Yale Radio project, seems interesting too. I listened to a few of the interviews, and it's a vast project.
It is, and it's growing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Matt, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.